be provided free of charge. It's all taking place March 9th from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. in the Marine Drive Residence Commons Block, 2205 Lower Mall on UBC campus. Entrance fee is $8. Pay at the door or ensure your spot in advance by going online to speedrenting.ca/UBC.
Like Stephen King writes horror. If I was a Jew, then I'd light up a menorah. I got bombs for ya, excuse me, senora. Are you a horror? Are you a lady? Is it Erica Boyer or Marsha Brady? Let me know, hun, the deed'll get done. Just us in the position. I'll take my rod and then I'll go fishing. I'll get your river flowing. I'm always in the knowing. It comes to giving pleasure. I'm every woman's treasure. I came to work your body, so let me do my job. I've never been laid off, my rhyme is still paid off. Now I'm making records, now I'm making tapes. Steady busting suckers in bunches like grapes. Making all the papes, scooping up the loot. Putting suckers on the run, pull my gun and then I shoot. I never been a front, I never been a fraud. I got a natural skill, for that I thank the Lord. Cause I feel blessed, I'm casually dressed. I always got my gun, but I never wear a vest. I'm quick on the draw, like the horse named McGraw from the cartoon. Boom, shalak, lock, boom, shalak, lock, boom.
Alright now,
boom, shalak, lock, boom.
Everybody,
boom, shalak, lock, boom.
Okay, that's quite enough of that. It is Tuesday. It is 4:30 Pacific Standard Time, which means it is time for Vancouver's preeminent mixed martial arts program, In the Cage with Bards. And because it is International Women's Day, and I loves the ladies, I am still Carlin Bardsley. Lots to get to today, as both UFC and Strikeforce had shows this past weekend. Battlefield's got a show coming up here in town this Saturday. And we have an exclusive interview with former Strikeforce women's welterweight champion, BC's own Sarah Kaufman. With all that to discuss, let's get to it then, shall we? UFC had their Live on Versus 3 card Saturday night, emanating from Louisville, Kentucky, and the unfortunately named KFC Yum Center. Yes, they really call it that. The main event between Diego Sanchez and Martin Campman went the distance, and when it's all said and done, I wonder whether more people will remember the amazing 15 minutes of action that has the bout as an early fight of the year contender, or the absolutely terrible decision that followed it. The first round saw Campman knock down Sanchez, shrug off Sanchez's takedowns, and open up Diego's face to clearly take the round. The second round saw more of the same, as Campman was lighting up Sanchez on the feet and avoided all takedown attempts, but Diego did put together a few flurries towards the end of the round and clipped Campman with a couple of punches, but most of his offense consisted of winging his arms violently, no matter if anything made contact or not. The third round saw Sanchez put a little more together in the way of offense and finally get a takedown, the one he succeeded on in 15 attempts, which saw Campman quickly get back to his feet. Sanchez continued winging his arms around with his face bleeding like a stuck pig and an apparent orbital bone injury. Then came the bell. The decision was read, and in the most baffling decision since, well, unfortunately the last UFC card, which saw Ricky Fukuda robbed of a decision over Nick Ring, Diego Sanchez was awarded the unanimous decision victory. Sal D'Amato was one of the judges for the fight. Coincidentally, he was also a judge for the absolutely awful decision in the Fukuda-Ring fight in Australia. And Kentucky local judge William Mattingly, I am told, has never judged a high-level MMA event before. It's getting ridiculous that I have to keep saying this, but something really has to be done about the judging in MMA. I'm tired myself of having to come on here and tell you fine people about how another deserving fighter was robbed of a victory. Well, we know the problem. What are some solutions? Well, monitors at the judges' table seem like a no-brainer. Hopefully more programs are like Big John McCarthy's command judging course, which recently came to Richmond. The more qualified judges we'll have, and miscarriages of justice like this will become more of an aberration. We can only hope. Dana White was a huge fan of the fight, as UFC president not only gave Sanchez and Campman $60,000 fight of the night bonuses, but also threw in another $100,000 each just for liking it. That payday may take some of the sting out of Campman's night. The semi-main event saw Mark Munoz get a quick KO win over CB Dolloway in middleweight action. Munoz landed a powerful right hand to knock Dolloway down and then follow up with a hammer fist to put Dolloway into unconsciousness. Mario Yamasaki wisely stopped the fight, but Dolloway cried foul and said he was fine because, well, that's what Dolloway does every time he loses. Good stoppage by the ref Yamasaki and great win for Munoz. In other middleweight action, Alessio Legionaria Sakara dropped a decision to rising prospect out of the Matt Serra camp, Chris Weidman. Sakara was able to work his hands in the first round, but the wrestler Weidman was able to keep Sakara on his back for the majority of the final two rounds and open up a nasty cut on Sakara with some ground and pound. When all is said and done, walked away with the unanimous decision victory in his UFC debut. There were a couple of funny moments during the fight as well. And one coming in the second round, when the fight was stopped to check Sakara's cut, Sakara decided he didn't want to wait for the doctor and wiped his face on the referee's shirt. I'd never seen that one before. The other moment came on commentary when Joe Rogan grew tired of hearing a USA chant and said, "Welcome to Kentucky. These goofs don't realize Sakara lives in America." Well said, Mr. Rogan. Well said. The spooky Twilight Zone Voodoo Award of the night goes to the rematch between featherweights Brian Bowles and Demasio Page. Page once again rushed Bowles early and was peppering him with knees, spinning back kicks, and crazy punch combos. Bowles eventually regained his bearings and rocked Page with an uppercut before pouncing on his downed opponent and dropping some leather. Bowles then grabbed a guillotine where the fight was stopped at 3:30 of the first round. The same finish at the same time of the first fight. Go on, tell me that's not spooky. Bowles gets back on the winning track and has his eyes set on the bantamweight title held by the man who defeated him, Dominick Cruz. UFC also showed two fights on the Facebook, the first being Steve Cantwell's return to fighting after an 18-month layoff and maybe a bit of ring rust as French kickboxer Cyril Diabaty was able to keep Cantwell on the end of his jab and fire off leg kicks at will, and despite gassing towards the end of the fight, was able to keep it in cruise control and walk away with the unanimous decision victory. The other fight shown on the Facebook saw an upset as Danny Castillo took a decision over UFC veteran and former Ultimate Fighter winner Joe Daddy Stevenson. Castillo, who incidentally stole my nickname of Last Call, looked more energetic throughout the fight and owned Stevenson on the feet while also being able to get Joe Daddy in some uncomfortable positions on the ground and avoid Stevenson's patented guillotine before time ran out and Castillo was awarded the fight. I was really impressed by Castillo and look forward to seeing him fight his way up UFC's lightweight division. A really fun card, marred only by a wonky decision in the main event. We'll be back to talk about Strikeforce's card right after this.
Bond. James Bond.
Got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Just a sweet transvestite. From transsexual Transylvania.
Where else can you see Hollywood blockbusters, midnight cult classics, indie films, live music, burlesque, stand-up comedy, poetry slams, and live sporting events all at your local theater? The Rio Theater, voted number one in East Vancouver, your neighborhood indie theater that promotes all things cool.
Check out the Spike and Mike Sick and Twisted Animation Festival, March 10th through the 23rd, as well as fabulous midnight movies on the 4th and 18th, and Sucker Punch playing from the 24th through the 31st.
For more information, go to riotheater.ca.
Strike Force was also in action Saturday night from the Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio, headlined by a light heavyweight title clash between champion Rafael Feijão Cavalcante and the only man to hold two titles in two different weight classes simultaneously, Pride and UFC veteran Dan Hendo Henderson. The two stalked each other in the early stages of the opening round before Feijão landed a heavy right that buckled Hendo's legs. But Hendo was able to come to his senses quickly and gain top position. After a stand-up, Hendo was able to work his clinch game against the fence. The second saw Hendo stalk the champion looking for his patented right hand, and whenever Feijão tried to move away from Hendo's right, Hendo stuffed him against the fence. Hendo also managed to take Feijão down, but was swept later in the round before ending with a couple of Superman punches. The theme continued in the third as Hendo loaded up the right hand, and it looked to be a matter of time before it landed, and that time came at just 50 seconds into round three as the powerful right hand, dubbed by Mauro Ranallo as the H-Bomb, put Feijão to sleep and put the title around Henderson's waist. Henderson's win also brought him $250,000 in prize money, which shows another reason why he was happy to leave the UFC. The other title match on the card saw women's welterweight champion Marluce Kunin defend against Liz Gorilla Carmouche, who was a late replacement for the supposedly injured Misha Tate. Both women came out swinging, with Kunin taking the first with her controlled and accurate striking, but from there the challenger seemed to have the champion on the back foot as Carmouche was relentless in pressing the action when Kunin applied a tight guillotine choke from a standing position and held onto it even as they went to the ground, only to have Carmouche pull her head free. Most of the rest of the round consisted of Carmouche on top of Kunin on the ground, avoiding Kunin's submissions, ending the round with some massive groundage and poundage. Kunin appeared to be in trouble coming out of the round with a black eye. The third saw more of the same for Carmouche as she was even more dominant on the ground, pummeling away in mount position. I thought the referee might actually move in to stop it, but the champ was able to hang on and head back to her corner and regroup. The fourth saw Carmouche on top again, but in a finish reminiscent of the Anderson Silva Chael Sonnen fight, Kunin was able to apply a tight triangle choke and get the tap-out victory to hang on to her women's welterweight title and add a highlight reel finish to her resume. No shame for Carmouche, though. Her stock has risen dramatically for taking the fight on 2 weeks' notice, and all eyes will be on her next fight for sure. In middleweight action, U.S. Army veteran Tim Kennedy came out to Rooster by Allison Chains, which automatically gets some bonus points for me, as he took on ultra-dangerous Dutch kickboxer Melvin Manhoef. The book on Manhoef is get him on the ground because that's where he's weakest, and avoid standing with him because he will kill you. Manhoef did land some leg kicks early and showed some improved takedown defense, but in the end, it was the same old story as Kennedy took Manhoef to the mat and was able to secure the rear naked choke in the first round. The card opened with Jorge Masvidal and Billy Evangelista in welterweight action. Evangelista entered the fight at 11-0 with a bit of hype behind him as a prospect, but it was Masvidal's size and reach that were the difference, as he was able to keep Evangelista on the outside and frustrate him, keeping it in cruise control all three rounds to pick up a decision victory. In the end, Dan Henderson is the new light heavyweight champ, but it'll be the women's fight that has people talking. And we'll be back to talk to former Strikeforce women's champion Sarah Kaufman right after this.
Wednesday mornings on CITR from 8 to 10 a.m., it's the Suburban Jungle Show with your radio host, DJ Jack Velvet. Thrills, chills, excitement, and music. That's the Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 on 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You can also catch this show, streaming and podcast, at www.jackvelvet.net. Don't miss the Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesdays 8 to 10, 101.9 FM, CITR.
And welcome back. back to In the Cage with Bards. Our guest this week is the former Strikeforce Women's Welterweight Champion and a proud native of Victoria, British Columbia. Sarah Kaufman rejoins the program. Welcome back, Sarah.
Thanks for having me again.
It's my pleasure, and I mean that in every sincere way. Now, the last time we spoke, you were preparing for your fight against Marlos Kunin. Obviously, that fight didn't go exactly how you had planned. Looking back on it now, do you see any areas where you may have been able to do things differently?
Absolutely. I mean, there's always, in every fight, whether you win or lose, there are always different areas that you need to work on from that particular fight. And, you know, I made a couple stupid, large errors that, you know, cost me the fight. And I really didn't fight my fight. It's one of those things that was, it's really unfortunate. And, you know, I've definitely thought a lot about that fight. But, you know, I have to move on from there, and I mean, it's been too long, and I need to get back in there and get fighting. I go a little bit stir crazy if I don't get a fight every couple months. So it's been a long haul, and especially coming off a loss, you really want to get that win back, and it's been a while.
For sure. Did you see Marluce's title defense this weekend against Liz Carmouche?
Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see it yet. I've read a lot about it, and so I know pretty much how the fight went. You know, I wasn't able to actually watch the fight yet, but I'm not that surprised. Liz is a tough girl, and Marlos makes, some big mistakes herself going for certain things, but then she has a really good guard and can catch people with those submissions.
Misha Tate has taken some verbal shots from Kunin and Tanya Evinger, among others, regarding the legitimacy of her injury and subsequently pulling out of the Kunin fight. Having fought Tate before, what's your take on Misha pulling out of that title fight?
I don't really have a take on it necessarily. You know, if she's injured, she's injured. You know, maybe it's one of those things where, for me, I always want to fight, and I want to stay active, and I want to fight a lot, and so, you know, I'll fight through small injuries. But if it's an injury that, you know, could either have a large risk of becoming very serious and, you know, potentially hurting your career in the long run, or if it's just, you know, maybe the injury was bad enough that it wasn't allowing her to actually train. You know, I don't know. If she's already back kind of training pretty much full time, who knows how serious it was. But
right. To
me, it's kind of like you get a title shot, you take that title shot.
Absolutely. I know your next fight is coming up soon in AFC, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But what is your current status with Strikeforce?
I'm still fighting for Strikeforce. Right now, you know, I think we were in talks about fighting with Liz Carmouche, and then when Misha pulled out, that fight obviously kind of fell through because Liz got the shot at the title. So I hope and would assume that my next fight is going to be Liz Carmouche, which I think is a great fight for me, and Strikeforce has allowed me to take a fight outside of their organization so I can stay active because, you know, I can't sit on the bench for, it will be pretty much six months, which is a long time for a fighter to not be fighting.
Absolutely. So Liz Carmouche is on the agenda for Sarah Kaufman. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, that's what I'm hoping.
Excellent. April 2nd marks the Armageddon Fighting Championships AFC 5 card to be held at the Bear Mountain Arena. How excited are you to be fighting in your own backyard?
You know, it's a great opportunity to, you know, fight in front of the hometown crowd, and I've never fought in Victoria before, so it's a little crazy that, you know, I fought all these other places and this will be the first time that I've actually managed to, you know, fight in front of the hometown crowd. But it should be a great time, and there seems to be a lot of fans and friends who are planning on coming out, and it's going to be a huge crowd.
How many people roughly are bothering you for tickets right now?
You know, it's still, you know, just under 4 weeks out. And I've already had a lot of tickets sold, and people always wait to the last minute, so I'm going to think at least 500.
Holy moly.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, how did the opportunity to fight for AFC come about?
Well, we have a lot of really good fighters out of Zuma. Adam Zujek is an amazing coach, and so we already have Nick Dreger, Ryan James, Connor Wood, Diego Wilson. They've all fought for the AFC in the past, it being a local promotion, we being, you know, local in the community, in the MMA community in Victoria. And so I've attended every show, been in their corners. You know, and every show has gotten better and better, and they've been bugging me to, you know, to kind of hinting that they wanted me to fight for a while. And I was tied up with Strikeforce, fighting for them, which was great. And then I just had this layoff, and you know, Strikeforce okayed me to find a fight, and this is what we found. And it seems like it's going to be a really good partnership for myself and for the AFC.
Excellent. I've heard that your opponent has confirmed to be Molly Helsel. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Oh, that'll be a good one. Well, now, while Molly's a definite gamer from what I've seen of her, the Karina Dam fight in particular, she has lost her last four fights, and you've already got a win over via TKO. Are you viewing this fight more of as a tune-up fight to get back into the mix with Strikeforce?
You know, I think every fight is kind of a tune-up fight. It's keeping you active. It's keeping you busy. And Molly is not a walk in the park for anyone. You know, her record, you know, isn't the best record, but she's a tough opponent. She's been around the game for a long time, and she has great experience. And, you know, I know because, you know, we fought before and she lost, she's going to come and want that win and want that win back. So she's going to come in fighting hard, you know, and she'll stick in there. So it's going to be a great fight. And if anyone's able to make it over to Victoria or if you're in Victoria, you know, they should definitely contact me to get tickets because it's going to be an awesome main event.
Look at you, getting right into the promotion there. I like that. Do you think Molly has evolved much as a fighter, or are you expecting more of the same from what you saw of her last time out?
Every fighter always evolves. And I mean, we fought, I guess, almost 3 years ago, so that's a long time to change. I've changed as a fighter, and I'm sure she's changed as a fighter as well. You know, you can't rely on how you fought, you know, an opponent the first time to win you a fight the second time. You really have to, you know, take a look at the game plan, take a look at their fighting style, see what they like to do now, and work on what you like to do now, and, you know, mix it up a bit and just be very, very spontaneous and in the moment, so it's unexpected.
How do you see the fight ending? Another TKO victory or perhaps another Rampage Jackson-esque slam like we saw in your win over Roxanne Modafari?
I would love the knockout. Absolutely.
Beautiful. Beyond regaining the title, who are some other names in the division that you'd like to match up against?
You know, at this point, I've always been open to fighting, you know, pretty much anyone they put in front of me. I think that Liz Carmouche makes the most sense for the next fight, especially because she's had a couple wins in Strikeforce, so, you know, I think the whole idea would be I'd get a win in Strikeforce and then fight again for the title, because it's my title and I want that title back.
So, assuming that you come out of the fight against Molly with no bumps or bruises, how soon could you expect to be fighting Liz? Maybe the fall or the summer? Or has there been any discussion of when that fight might take place?
I don't actually do any of that discussion. That's all done, you know, through Strikeforce and through Adam and other people that are helping me out. So, you know, I'd be ready to fight in a week, in 3 days. You know, just put me in there.
Excellent. As you may or may not be aware, today is International Women's Day. How does it make you feel knowing that your success has made you a role model for aspiring Canadian women fighters everywhere?
Well, I guess it's an honor, and it's quite humbling because I just think that I'm from Victoria, and you know, I'm lucky enough to get paid to do what I love, and I try and represent myself in the best light possible and try and be a good person. So if other people can look up to that, you know, as I say, it's an honor. And, you know, I'll do whatever I can to keep pushing the females in MMA, and that's all I can do.
Great. With the explosion of the success of women's MMA in the past couple of years, people like Gina Carano and Christine Cyborg becoming huge names, how long do you think it'll be until UFC adopts a women's division?
At this point, I honestly don't know how to answer that question. It's a question that comes up quite frequently and has been brought up to Dana White, has been brought up to everyone at the UFC. And you know, they're fans of the sport at the UFC. It's not that they're just UFC. You know, I'm sure they keep an eye on every other promotion, even the small ones, to pick out talent, to see what's going on. So they know about the ladies. And with the WEC merger, at this point, I don't see it happening anytime soon. But Strikeforce, you know, is a great promotion. They have some great you know, visibility in terms of being on Showtime. You know, I just found out that they now have a partnership with Primetime, I think, in the UK. So now all the Challengers cards are going to be shown in the UK as well. I mean, that's a big setting. They have all their partnerships with the Japanese promotion. So there's a lot of opportunity in Strikeforce. And as I say, you know, they're the biggest organization for women right now, and they're doing the best they can and really trying to push, you know, especially the 135-pound division, which is me.
we talked before about how you were a ballet dancer before you discovered MMA. Has there ever been a time when you've been beat up so bad that you thought to yourself, damn it, I should have stayed in ballet?
Not at all. Not once. It's totally different, and I do miss certain aspects of dancing. As you know, I did it for 18, 19 years, and it was a large part of my life, but it's actually kind of coming full circle, and a lot of my previous dance teachers are going to be actually at the fight in Victoria, and kind of get to see me in action, which, you know, it'll be fun on for myself and for them.
Well, absolutely, you made the correct decision. You're a hell of a fighter, a great guest, and an inspiration. Anything else you want to say on the way out?
You know, I just have to thank, you know, all the fans who have supported me, you know, through all my wins, through my loss. Hopefully everyone can make it over to Victoria. As I said before, the AFC is doing a really good job of trying to push MMA. I have to thank my team, Zuma, my coach, Adam Zujek, all my teammates. I actually have a teammate, Diego Wilson. He's fighting in aggression for the aggression 135-pound title on Friday of this week, so I'm super excited for him. And, you know, hope everyone watches. It's going to be on the score. If anyone wants to contact me for tickets, they can just either go onto my Facebook, which is facebook.com/sarahkaufman.mma, or they can send me an email. Pretty easy to find. Go to my website, sarahkaufman.ca.
Thank you so much for joining us again. April 2nd at the Bear Mountain Arena in Victoria, AFC 5 featuring none other than the great Sarah Kaufman. We'll be back to wrap things up right after this.
Hi, this is Ron McLean of Hockey/Movie Night in Canada. You're listening to CITR 101.9.
Thank you very much, Ron. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks again to Sarah Kaufman for appearing on the program, and best of luck to her in her fight against Molly Helsel April 2nd in Victoria at AFC 5. Also want to remind everyone that this Saturday night, the Edgewater Casino here in Vancouver plays host to Battlefield 6 Over the Edge. The card is headlined by a 175-pound catchweight fight between West Coast BJJ's wrestling standout Micah Brakefield taking on all 6'6" of Matt Dwyer from Team Havoc out of Kelowna. The co-main event features teammates of the main event fighters going at each other in featherweight action as... Team Havoc's Chris Day takes on West Coast BJJ's Jeremy Kennedy. The winner of this one will be the number one contender for the Battlefield featherweight title. Also on the card, Revolution MMA's Ash Mashragi takes on Andrew Valiquette out of the Wolves Den in welterweight action this Saturday night at Edgewater Casino, Battlefield 6. Check it out. Come on out and support local amateur MMA. Don't you dare miss it. In closing, I'd just like to mention that this will be the final episode of In the Cage with Bards here on CITR. I'd like to thank everyone that's taken the time to listen to the program, and of course everyone in the MMA world that's taken time out of their busy schedules to talk to a schlub like me. Of course, I'd like to thank everyone here at the station, CITR Program Director Bryce Dunn, for tolerating me being one of the least technically capable programmers in the station's history. What can I say? When I took radio at school, I had a girl named Penny Black do all my production for me, and God, I could have used her on this run. Also, music director Luke Meat for answering my inane questions, and station manager Brenda Gruneau. How can anyone not love Brenda? Special thanks to Paul the Mauler Lazenby, Vancouver Suns Chris Perry, and Merkel Mladenovich for all of their help and support. We'll head off now into the sunset with something I found on the YouTube. A fan made a mashup of Axl Rose's vocals from the song If the World from the Chinese Democracy album and layered it over the music from Velvet Revolver's Slither to give us a glimpse of what we might be missing if only Axl and Slash could get along. It's a beautiful dream. Maybe we'll see you at another time, another place. But for right now, the bell has sounded.